More and more I feel that anybody who is really anxious to get that able position may not fully understand it, because if one is really anxious to get it, I feel this person is ignorant about the able position. But when one starts to understand it, well, I know many brothers and sisters, actually, but many brothers who've come to the 40-day training over the years who've been like state leaders or national leaders. And I went around at the beginning of the training to look for group leaders. And I say, hey, Joe, would like to be a... He says, you mean a group leader? No, please. Just let me study. I just want to be quiet. I want to sit way in the corner back there. Please don't give me responsibility for anybody. And I said, but you lead one whole nation. I know, but please, just 40 days vacation. You know. And so actually a tradition started in our 40-day training that sometimes national leaders were just members of the group, and their own members in their nation were sometimes the leaders of the group. It was rather challenging. But really the able responsibility is a demanding responsibility. I'm certainly not going to be speaking from an absolute point today, but just some things that personally have come into my own understanding over the years through discussion with brothers and sisters and just through experience. And especially, of course, watching our true parents and seeing how they work in that role of parents. I think, first of all, the position of able. When we get that position, it is so easy to assume that one has done something to earn it. But there is only one able in the whole of human history that ever got that position of able because they earned it, and that's Father. Let's say earned able. But for the rest of us, it's as if we got the position first, and then afterwards we have to earn it. It's a whole backwards process. And one who would assume that they earned it and then they got it, this person is in big danger sometimes of hurting themselves and hurting the people that work with them. And so once we got the position, it's then afterwards that we can start building the foundation for that position. A good example, and I think probably one of the best examples you'll ever find, is our own true mother. In 1960, she was blessed with Father, as you know, and she had a very pure upbringing, as you know. She married Father at the age of 17, and if you look at her life from her own testimony before she married Father, it's like she was raised for this responsibility of being true mother. She said herself, she was raised in a greenhouse and raised to become in some way in a very special position to be used by heaven. So I'm sure that she knew that not everybody was raised the way she was and got such special care and treatment, cultivation, everything, good intellect, strength as a person. And actually, when she was chosen to be the bride of the Messiah, there were many women around Father who wanted so much to have that responsibility, to have that position as bride of the Messiah. Naturally, Father told the story that around him there were many women who were in their 30s who thought reasonably that it would be about right for a 34-year-old woman to be married to a 40-year-old man. And so when Mother was picked in 1960, at 17 years old, less than half of Father's age, there was a lot of feeling. You know the word murmuring? There was a lot of murmuring going on, a lot of talk going on behind the scenes, and bad feeling. Even though she was sweet and beautiful, that's even worse. It even made it worse. And so Mother was in a position to, in a sense, immediately become a really difficult Abel, so to speak. For example, if mother had been blessed with father and then asked all the women to come in afterwards when father went out and said, "Now listen, I knew you were hoping for father, but you don't know how I was raised, the special care that God put into me, the love that I've received all my life. I was born for this. You just think you were. I'm the true mother. I know I'm 17, but it shows all the more what you can do in 17 years. So, can you imagine what would have happened? Those women would have literally exploded. And it would have been just hell on earth there, literally. You know, sometimes around the Messiah is the place where there's most difficult things going on. Anyway, Meshach Che, you know, Taco told you the story about that woman who fell in love with father, you know, yesterday. Yeah, Meshach Che, Mama San Che, used to call her, was there that day. And actually, this was right around the time when mother was blessed with father. And I think it was either just before the blessing or just after. I think just before, there was an opportunity for mother to come out and to share with the ladies. And she just came out, you know, and there was this feeling in the atmosphere, sort of like, you know, sort of like cats, sort of this sort of feeling. And mother just came out, this little 17-year-old. She said, "I really need your prayer because I realize this job is so big for me. Please pray for me." And everybody started to cry. She was saying, "I don't have a foundation. I'm going to have to build it now. Please pray for me. I need your help." Well, don't you think that a lot of those clouds must have blown away in that moment? Meshach Che said herself, so much immediate feeling there of closeness, and she just started crying herself. So that's the most wonderful example we have of someone who received the highest position to be the counterpart of the Messiah, but who spent the next 7 years of her life after the blessing earning the title, after she, in a sense, got it. And because of that, you know that mother's course in the 7 years actually was really difficult. She was, in a way, like a scullery maid or like a servant many times. She was literally down on her knees. And even father was aware of the potential jealousy from other women, for mother and her mother, Mrs. Hong. So father never gave them any special favors and never wanted to give anybody else the feeling that he was specially favoring mother or Mrs. Hong. And so they really had to get on their knees for 7 years. And mother did it. And I don't know how it could be. It's so easy to think, well, he's the Messiah, it must be very beautiful around him, so she had all kinds of angels helping her or something. But I think what God had to put her through so she could understand the suffering of a world full of women and a world full of people, I don't think God was easy on her. So the strength of this particular Abel figure in our movement, our own true mother, is tremendous, phenomenal. Because simply, she realized that she would have to earn what she was given after the fact, and that she hadn't done anything before the fact. That was her attitude. So, and it was then that father proclaimed her the true mother, finally. And now we can all proclaim her too, the true mother, this position. So, that's an important thing. One last point too, I think, about mother is that she served and served and served until she could finally be proclaimed true mother. But then did the service stop? No, more now. More service. More serving than ever. She went through the role of servant, and then she got the role of the mother, and almost like father said one time, queen of the cosmos. but she's still serving day and night with all of her heart and soul. So it didn't change. When she got the title, nothing changed in one way. Even more dedication. The problem of the one who felt that they earned the title of able, or again, earned before they received that position of able. The immediate problem of this person will be insecurity, because it's like imagining that there's a foundation here. And something inside of us knows there's no real foundation. And the problem of an insecure able is a very difficult one sometimes. I've seen that. I don't know if you've ever seen the situation where there's somebody who has been a very good supporter or in a very good cane position, and they were very comfortable in a supporting role, but then one day got an able role. And sometimes this is dangerous. The best kind person in a support role, who everybody thought would do great as an able, because of some mistake in the thinking, I was a great supporter, now I get the job of able, suddenly becomes a tyrant. I don't know if you've ever seen that. It's a very interesting phenomenon. And again, it's because of a mistake in the thinking that I did something good, now I'm getting my reward, the able position. Now I can be the leader. And this can create real problems. So, consequently, with that kind of thinking, then a leader can be very defensive, very insecure. You know, the situation where any word of criticism, what did you say about me? I heard you said something about me. Willem, you've been talking to somebody about me. What did you say? You know, and this is such a sad thing to see. You find that in the lives of dictators like Idi Amin or Muammar Gaddafi or whatever, you'll always find a strong police force that more than ever are centered on protecting the name of the dictator. Anybody speaking about anybody, about Amin or whoever, more than anything else, be pulled in and even killed. And this is taking to an extreme that insecurity, able, knowing, not really standing on a true foundation, everything false. And anybody, even, you know, this Gaddafi, sending assassination teams around the world, going halfway around the world to shoot somebody who said something bad about him. Now, this is a really insecure man, frankly speaking. So, it's really different. Look at Father. What if he was insecure? He'd have to shoot millions of people. Said something bad about him in the newspapers and everything. But he knows the ground that he stands on. He's very sure and secure about that. So I think we, as those who receive that great gift of being able to serve God and serve our brothers and sisters in a leadership position, ought to also realize the ground we stand on. And it's so sometimes difficult. Today, I'd like to speak briefly. Jim, I want to go till about 7. Okay. Can you stay with me till 7? Okay. God bless you. Stimulating input from a cane. That's it. Okay. Able as a servant, as an educator, as a disciplinarian, as a counselor, basically these four. And of course there is the one as a parent too. But I think as we go through these, we can find out something about, again, that parental heart of Abel. And of course, there is Abel as just a strong leader leading the troops into battle, too. But in a sense, we're talking about, I think, inner attitudes at this point. And I think in the future, perhaps before we close this session, we can talk about the attributes of Abel in terms of really head-to-head fighting with the devil, you know, and those great qualities that we've seen in, let's say, the strong leadership responsibility. First of all, as a servant, and I just want to make fundamentally one or two main points about each of these areas. Abel as a servant is crucial. Serving the members. We learn the tradition of service in the family, but simply service without understanding the internal meaning behind the service can sometimes be sort of like a stewardess on an airplane. She brings coffee and tea and your meals, and she'll change your baby's diapers and so on, and hold the bag if you get sick. But she's not looking for your original potentiality. She's basically just serving. And I think in the family, we become very sensitive to outer service as opposed to inner service. As an able figure, or as a leader, let's just say leader. As a leader, in serving a member, serving our brothers and sisters, we're not just serving like that airplane stewardess serves, but we're serving their potentiality, and ought not never to forget it. A mother, for example, before she can ever claim herself as a mother to a baby, has to serve so much. I see, every time I see what happens when we have a new baby in the house, my wife basically turns into a total slave. Babies are completely unreasonable. We're having a baby in August, and I know what the baby will do. I can predict. Just, it's the worst cane in the world. even sinless ones. They are so bad, you know, to their mother. First of all, okay, you may laugh, but it's true. You'll know in a few years. First of all, of course, it's so painful to have the little baby. And the mama goes through a lot of pain to bring birth. But the baby doesn't say thank you. She brings the baby home, and the baby, first of all, decides to establish its own schedule. So mama can't say, now listen, the schedule will be finished at 11:30 tonight, and as a good follower of mine, please go to sleep at 11, wake up at 7 for morning service. No, the baby goes to sleep at 7 in the morning and is awake all night. Mama wants to go to bed at midnight. The baby accommodates her for maybe 20 minutes, and then 12:20, wakes up for 2 hours. And what does it do? It cries for 2 hours. And just becomes very totally active. In the middle of the afternoon, the baby's sleeping peacefully. I've had two or three babies that turn the clock backwards. Then my wife is up all night. The baby doesn't care. Sometimes I even had resentment to my own baby because I saw my wife. She's like this, so tired. She's still healing from the birth, and the baby doesn't care anything. Also, breastfeeding the baby. The baby is heartless also. Because, I'm glad my wife's not here, but they can really suck. And it hurts, from what I understood. And after two or three babies, you know what happens.
there's no more shape. The baby's heartless in this way. And mommy is just, you know, used up, so to speak. And then mommy just lays the baby in bed, looks like it's going to go to sleep, just got it fed and everything, and she's just wiped out, 3 o'clock in the morning, and the baby looks up, and all of a sudden you hear, so we're going to pick the baby up and take it over and change it now. So I say the baby has absolutely no consideration for its able figure. Listen, did you ever have a cane figure that bad? So, and this goes on. Of course, they start to grow, but this goes on for like 2 years. I'm very sure if someone in our household was like that, or in our center, for 2 days, we'd go crazy. But the baby goes on for 2 years like this, and there's no, not even one word of thanks. One word of thanks. Set the table, and a 2-year-old, they call it terrible two. The baby's just high enough to reach things that can be broken, you know. So here's the table. It's right here. You just got it set. Baby walks up and grabs, because just learning how to walk, grabs the tablecloth and walks away. Bam! Everything goes down on the floor. There's no gratitude. And afterward, you say, why did you do that? And it's just unbelievable. And so the mother, and of course the father too, is enslaved for a number of years. And as a child grows, then there is more slavery too. Because to get this little one up to the point where they're going to be able to start making responsible decisions for their lives, to be able to take care of themselves and so on, takes literally years and years. And then the other thing now is to get them through school. School is very treacherous these days with cocaine, marijuana, alcohol going around, dirty magazines and everything. How do we get our kids through school? So then you have to really stick with your kid as they go through school. And this is another factor, but basically, Mama works and works and works and works, and I don't hear my own children say thank you that much after a good meal. You know, they don't say thank you so much. My oldest one is beginning to learn how to thank his mama and run up and kiss her, you know, day by day. But the little ones are still pretty heartless. And it's been like 5-6 years. So I wonder, what is the thing that keeps her going? And very simply, it is knowing that someday those little ones are going to become big ones, and that all of those immaturities and that inability to think of another person can grow in some way into maybe a great man or woman. She sees the potential as a parent. And that's the parent's heart, to see that potentiality and to live for that day by day. I mean, what if, can you imagine giving birth to a baby that would be a baby eternally and never grow? For years and years and years. Baby's 27 years old and it's still this long. And still just wearing diapers and sucking on the breast. This is kind of hopeless. But again, those children are going to grow and become adults. And so for that reason, Mama and Papa work hard to give everything to those children. And one day, you get rewarded. Because when that child is maybe even 14 or 15, one day a child walks up and says, you know, you've been a great mother for me. And that makes 14 years worth it. That makes 14 years absolutely valuable. That one word. I know. To hear your little kids call up and say, Daddy, I miss you. It means a lot. So, simply, we're asked to invest so much. And you say, well, it's a little different with adults. I don't think it's so different. Maybe we have control of our bowels now. And we're a little bit different level of maturity. But the amount of need that one person has in order to be restored is tremendous. The need that is represented by one human life, all that has been gone through, everything that needs to be expressed, it's tremendous. And there's no simple formula. So in a position of leadership, we are in a position to really consider those things. So praying for that potential, loving it, and so on, it's an important thing. Of course, we're going to talk about discipline later on, because discipline is also part of it. Then what about as an educator? As an educator, Abel has a big responsibility too, because education is influential. What you teach, for example, again, what a parent teaches their children, it remains with them. Children are like soft clay. You put the impression in it, it will harden and it will stay there. So what we teach is important. And I think in our own family, in this movement of restoration, again, in the Unification Church, as educators, we have such a deep and heavy responsibility. Johann Lee makes a very important statement here about the educator. He said that the educator is in the role of Lucifer. The leader as educator is in the role of Lucifer. In a sense, like the elder brother or elder sister, and one who brings God's words to the younger ones, and those words are powerful. And if those words are centered on God's purpose and motivated by the love of God and righteousness centered in God, then no problem. But if those words are centered in oneself, watch out. Because it's a big misuse of a very big weapon of truth, the sword of truth. I'll give you an example. The situation, and I can readily confess to you that I've done this before in my own experience in leadership. The situation where, with the best of intentions, you give a morning service. And you're doing it with the best of intentions. But, for example, you give the morning service so that the members can go out and make a lot of money that day. And so get everybody all inspired and everything to go on out and get it. Well, that's necessary. It's important. But at the same time, it's important that we recognize that those words of God are to grow the person and to help them. Because what if they come back with nothing? And as I said, I'm responsible for this in the past. And sometimes this can degenerate. We're under a lot of pressure to bring people, to bring money, to bring results in our movement. But if we start getting too result-oriented in our, our own guidance, our own teaching of our members, they start to feel their value is wrapped up in their results. And I had one sister come. She was from Australia. And she was the leader of the Australian fundraising team at one time. And this girl could really make profit. She was a very pretty girl, very highly motivated, really just one of these people that has a destiny, a good destiny to earn money. And anyway, she had a time where she really went through something difficult, and she really went down and couldn't do anything. So when she came here for 40-day training, she felt really with no value, because there was no way to restore before she left. She just left at the bottom of the valley, so to speak, the valley of the shadow of death. And she came here and she said, what value do I have? And she was really kind of moaning and moaning. And the mother figure of that training session, Pamela Stein, who we worked with a number of years, in the middle of the sister's kind of lament, said to her one day, "What if you found yourself in the middle of Siberia in a prison camp, unable to have even one chocolate bar to sell in your hand, in a wretched shape, terrible health, unable to move, stinking like a rat, in a little cage, freezing?" Now that's really valueless, isn't it? Do you think God would be with you? And so, I feel somehow in education, as a leader, a primary importance for us is to help people understand their value before God. And as they do, the results will come. It may be a struggle, but the results begin to come. And the results will come continuously. But if people start getting their value mixed up with their results, it might work for a while, but it won't work for long. And that is a sad situation, because it's, if you understand my word, it's quantifying people. And people get tired. Finally, people are more important than results. And as people can become true people and mature and grow, results, as I say, will come. And this is, I think, an important thing, especially in a movement when we're under so much pressure for results. And I do not, for a minute, put down results, because we've got to get them. Father is screaming for them every day. But we, as interpreters of that word of Father, in a leadership role, have to understand deeply the meaning under Father's words. Because I'm very sure Father understands these things. So, an educator is so important. Of course, externally, to motivate and to help our people really be able to do God's will. But internally, to really feed and to nourish that human soul and help them to realize that even if they couldn't get results, they're still the son and daughter of God. And to help them stand up for the future. So, education, so important. There's so many more things to say, I think, about that. But again, it's the same as serving, educating the potentiality in a person and knowing that it's not going to happen overnight. The potentiality will not come out overnight, any more than a tree can grow to 300 feet in a week. But to start to invest in that potential through the education is important. So, as a disciplinarian, and this is a difficult one, I know Juan Phil Kim was asked a couple of years ago about what kind of leader is best, a soft, comprehensive leader or a strong, judgmental leader. In other words, a really, this kind of person, or, you know, more this way. And he was asked that question. And his answer was so interesting. He said, "Well, sometimes you got to be this way, and sometimes you got to be that way." He said, "Raising, again, members involves all of those things." And I think it's important to realize that it's not a matter of just being one kind of a leader, but as we experience leadership, we begin to find that there are many attributes that are important in leadership. Being able to take a very objective role, and sometimes to take a strong subjective role, because all of those things are needed in this course of restoration. It's like a road. Sometimes it's flat, everyone's going along well, but sometimes it gets rocky and you need a lot of pulling power at that time. You know, there's all kinds of things to encounter. Discipline is, I think, an important part. Discipline is an interesting word, too. It doesn't just mean getting beat up or doesn't just mean being strong with someone. Look at this disciple. Discipline is training in being a disciple. And in order to walk with Christ, it takes a disciplined person, doesn't it? I think we all become more and more aware of that. To walk with Christ demands a lot of inner and outer discipline as well. And if anything, I know the older I get in the movement, I realize myself how far away from this discipline I in my own life was, and how far it is to reach a true standard of discipline, especially the internal kind of discipline. And so a leader needs to again take a role of one who can help people develop discipleship. That's a good friend, someone who can help us do that. So what's the key in discipline? Again, it comes back to the same thing we spoke of in this one and this one. Servant and educator. If one focuses on disciplining people's fallen nature, it has a very different effect than if one is disciplining for the purpose of bringing out that true nature, so to speak. I'll give you another example, and this was a case study that was done in Japan a number of years ago. Two mothers and two sons. Both mothers were very strict. Mothers in Japan these days, I understand, are quite strict with their children, especially about school and education. One mother disciplined her son, and at the age of 18, he was totally alienated from his mother. Very strict woman. But they found that this woman constantly went after his bad, weak parts. Why are you this way? Why are you that way? Just always picking this way. And her consciousness was always aggravated at his bad parts, and disciplined him from that point of view. And again, as I said, the son was really alienated from his mother at the age of 18. The other woman, who was equal, or maybe, I don't know, perhaps even stronger in her discipline, she disciplined her son with a love for, again, this potentiality in him. And so through her discipline, she was always focusing on, again, what he could become. And that was the motivating factor behind her discipline. And at the age of 18, they had a very beautiful, close relationship. The son reached that age. The silent motivating factor behind discipline is very important. As a leader, if you've ever had to apply discipline, either vocally or in some way, asking someone some solid condition or whatever, you'll find that it's very important to pray before you level it out. Very important to get yourself clear and to realize, again, a higher motivation before one starts that. Because with the unclear motivation, or just being aggravated or angry at a member, then this can be more and more a problem that's going to bring reaction, so on. It doesn't mean that even with the purest motivation, you'll never get reaction. But one should really, again, exercise prayer and real consideration. I asked Oni Durst one time, because she's my spiritual mama. She's a very strong leader, very strong. And I saw her one night walk up to one brother who was on the staff of the Oakland Center. This was 1971. And this brother was, a solid brother, solid staff member. Anyway, he had forgotten to do something that was important, and things had gotten mixed up. She walked up to him in this hall, and he was standing here. She was just very small, and he was about this high. And she walked up, and I don't know what she said, but it was rather strong. He just, like this. And then she hit him right in the forehead. Bang, you know. And he was just this way. And I took note of that. And so when I could speak to her not so long later, I said, how do you prepare to do something like that? Because I was a new leader, and I was a new leader, and I was reflecting, yes, I need to be strong too. I wonder if I could walk up and smack somebody in the forehead. At that point in my life, probably I'd walk up and smack, and they'd smack me right back. So I was very new. And again, I was concerned with how to be a strong leader. That kind of caught me, especially looking at my spiritual mother. And I asked her how she got the kind of, how did she prepare to do that? She gave me a very interesting answer. She said, I always ask myself, did I love that person 10 times more than what I'm going to discipline them? And it's a very strong judgment in a way. So I think really coming around full circle, it's not a matter of being a strong disciplinarian type of leader or a comprehensive whatever. Look at parents. As children grow, one time or another, parents have to be all things to them. 360-degree parents. Sit and listen to their silly, silly little stories. To sleep with them, to eat ice cream with them. To share everything. Sometimes to give a little bit of backside philosophy, the psychology. And a parent has to be everything. I'm not saying that our own members are like little children in any way, but it's an illustration simply. And that is that we're asked as a person in a leadership role to really develop ourselves into that person who can respond in all ways to our brothers and sisters. And as we learn, I think that when that moment comes, when there needs to be a strong word or caution or whatever, that we can do it from the heart and not just from aggravation or anger. So it's I think it's crucial to realize this as a disciplinarian, that we're not disciplining also just the fallen nature. So one more point too here, and it's important. I knew of one center where a leader was very concerned with everybody's fallen nature and wanted to get everybody straight. So this person instituted, believe it or not, a spy system. Yeah. We're just talking of an immature person. We're not talking of anything beyond that. But an immature person who was so much involved with getting everybody cleaned up this way, that person instituted a spy system. He wouldn't call it that. He would call it perhaps just concern. But the atmosphere in the center was one of fear, mistrust, and fear of saying anything about anybody. It was like Eastern Europe. And I'm sure the leader felt that he was really applying principles of discipline. Literally. So that wasn't apparent. The difference between, again, disciplining or just going after the fallen nature and living for the development and the growth of the original nature is so important. For example, just one more example. Let's compare it to a farmer. He's got a field. He needs to grow wheat in the field. There are rocks in the field that need to be picked out. Well, what this brother had done with his spy system was he had located many people around the field to scream at the rocks. You're making terrible fields! Blah, 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 blah. But the really right discipline is that as brothers and sisters, all of us could help pick the rocks, in a sense, and plant the wheat.